Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie,
Miranda,
Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Emotions,
Frenchies,
dudes.
So many dudes.
Every single dude.
All the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee
and Rose Cerno.
I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is Couldn't Help But Wonder.
A podcast where we talk about Sex and the City and how it relates
to us. Oh,
hi, Jamie Lena.
My God. Hello, Rosalita.
Who were you this week, my sweet?
Oh, God. Golly gee, God. Who the fuck was I? Sorry, I have to like collect my thoughts.
According to Instagram, it seems like it was a bit of a rough and tumble.
It was a little, yeah, okay, good, that's good, yes.
A little touch and go.
A little touch and go, so maybe a little bit of a Miranda.
She's the one who really.
Yeah, I feel like she's always kind of like, I just feel like she's kind of always worried.
Yeah,
like
she
kind of, there's always a problem, and that's kind of how I felt this week. I have been feeling like a lot of gratitude, but for some reason, I honestly think because elements of my life during the pandemic, or just the pandemic in general, not even elements of my life, just like the last, whatever, 2020, I guess was like, how am I trying
stable?
To describe it?
It was like all the same?
Yeah, it was all the same. And also like not great, obviously.
Which made big changes. You're living on another coast. And
right. So I think that now, because things are actually good, I'm looking for something to be bad because my brain was trained to think everything was bad all the time. So, like, I almost am not adjusted to the fact that, like, actually, I'm fine. Like, everything is actually fine.
Also, actually something that is Charlotte in the movie, not to tip things, but
like, oh, my God, that's right.
You know what, though? That's, also, yes. I feel like as the pandemic winds down and like regular life comes back, I do think for some people there will be an adjustment. Like, you were going through a lot personally, and I feel like it was very easy in the pandemic to be like, I'm just going to keep my head down and work on things, and no one's going to expect me to like interact, and I don't have to like.
That's right.
And now it's like, oh, okay, now you have to go out and be with people. And talk about things and open up about shit. And it's intense.
That's true. It's like your world is kind of, your world's like being infiltrated again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as private as it was.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are parts of that that I love. Last night, I properly like went to a bar with a big group. And
fun.
I kind of had a moment of like looking around. I'm like, oh, this is so surreal. Like,
was it fun?
It was so fun. But it was just like, I really had a moment of like, just like truly just taking stock of how many people were sitting in a group and none of us were worried. I mean, it was outside, but still, like during the pandemic, it was like, keep it to a minimum of 6. And it was like 10 people or something, 11 maybe.
I don't know.
Like, wow.
Now that I'm vaxxed, I really feel chill as hell.
Me like, too. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, I'm like popping into stores.
Oh, yeah. I last night there was a girl there who very casually said she doesn't want to get the shot.
Ew, gross.
And yeah, and then she was like, and my friend's mad at me. He called me selfish. And I was
like, it is selfish.
I was just a little like, I understand having concerns about getting a shot that is new and Corona's new and there's just so much we don't know. Like, I understand all the concerns. I really do. It was just like, you're not going to get vaccinated? Like, I don't know. I was just like, okay. Like, I don't know. I'm sure people listening are like, I feel the same way that this girl did. Because people are very split on it, it seems.
It's really hard for me to like separate this from, I'm very close with my mom and she's a public health person. So to me, it's like a very black and white issue, but I'm coming from a very particular place.
No, I think I feel that honestly, I don't, well, I'm not coming from the same place you are. I don't have anyone in the medical profession in my family, but I definitely didn't think twice. I was like, whatever I have to do to like get life
But even
back.
Beyond that, like, I do think it's selfish for people not to. And like, I definitely think everyone should get it. It only works if people get it. Like, it,
exactly.
COVID and will never go away if 50% of the population doesn't get it. It's also just, I have so many opinions about this. It's a different podcast because the things people do to themselves, it's like a vaccine. Like, you fucking do cocaine. You like have Botox in your face. There's a lot of stuff that you do.
There's a lot of shit we do that is not good for us.
The Impossible Burger, that's made in a lab and is made out of weird stuff. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Tofu. Like, don't get me started.
Yeah. So I think I have issues. Yeah. I have a neighbor who's like, oh, I would never get that, you know.
And oh, God.
She's a vegetarian yoga girl. And I just feel like, yeah, I guess if you just, everyone benefits from everyone who's getting the vaccine and it is selfish. So I'm sorry.
It
that's
my thought. It protects other people. Yeah.
And if you don't get it, it doesn't go away. Like, it'll just keep going.
Rose, who are you this week?
I think I'm a reverse Carrie when she refused to go to therapy.
Okay, meaning because you went and loved it.
No, nothing particular about therapy and specifically, but I just feel like I made some really cool choices this week that feel like the result of doing good work, if that makes sense. That sounds really vague. I got really panicky and anxious at the beginning of the week, and I feel like I really was able to calm myself down and like walk myself off a ledge and like actually move forward. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, it's a weird time. And then I also, you know, I'm single, I'm dating, and I was going on some dates with someone and it was moving a little too fast for me in all ways. I felt like, I like PDA. I'm a very warm, affectionate person, but not until I'm in an official relationship with somebody. I don't like holding hands.
I see.
I don't like holding hands or somebody taking my hand at dinner, at, like in public, or like putting their arm around my waist, like at date two or three. Mm. Like, that's way too soon.
I get that.
For me.
I get that.
Yeah,
I think I'm that way too. I hadn't really thought about it, but I guess I am probably the same way.
I think it's totally legit and lovely once I've made my decision about somebody. Mm-hmm. But before I do, I feel like, what is this? Like, so I had a really great conversation and I was like really nice and sweet. And I just like made my boundaries and the conversation went really well. And I just feel like I'm becoming a kind of person where it's like, I'm deciding what works for me and that's what I'm doing and I'm expressing it and that's that. And like, it just feels healthy instead of like what most people do, which is, oh, something's bothering me. I'm going to not say anything. And then I'm going to be really resentful about it. And then I'm going to be passive aggressive. And then I'm going to be anxious. And then I'm going to get drunk and say how I feel. Like,
sure. Well, what did you say to him? What was like, how did it come up?
I brought it up. I was just like, I just said like, you're really attractive and I'm like enjoying hanging out with you. And I think you and I are really similar. I was like, I'm very physically affectionate as well. And it feels good in the moment. But I think I am like a chihuahua that's very skittish about getting into a relationship. And I need to be like slowly put in like a warm bath. Like, it cannot go fast for me because it really revs me up. So to me, doing all that touch in public feels like we're closer than we are at this point. And I'm down to do that in like a relationship, but I don't feel like that's where I am yet. And he was like, thank you for telling me.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love that he responded so like nicely and succinctly.
Oh, he was like, it's really a relief to go out with somebody who says what's on their mind.
Sure. Yeah.
So I was just really proud of myself for managing this sort of anxious spiral that I had at the beginning of the week. And then, sort of just this dating thing. And, you know, I'm dating around. I just feel like the way I'm dating now is like the calmest, most grounded I've ever felt. Like, I am not.
What do you think shifted? You're just like,
I think
maybe
my 12-step program that I've been doing for like a year and a half, ACA, I think that's probably one of the most intense like areas of progress in my life, of where I'm seeing it in like my creative life and my writing life and my dating life. I just feel a little less I mean, I still get waves of anxiety. At the beginning of the week, I was anxious because my writing fellowship is now officially over and I'm up for staffing and I have no idea when I'm going to get staffed and I have to figure out what job I'm going to get until I get staffed. And I was just having a little bit of a anxiety job meltdown. Yeah. And so it's not like, oh, I did 12-step in ACA and now I never get anxious. I totally get anxious still. But of course. When I was having that, I was like, you know what, Rose, just sitting in front of your computer and trying to write right now in this state is absolutely worthless. I meditated. I took a long walk. I made myself a nourishing meal. And I was like, and we'll start again tomorrow. And then tomorrow was better, you know? And it's just like, there's just certain days where it's just like, game over for today. This is just not going to be a day. And trying to make myself make this a day is a fucking waste of time.
Oh, like, I like that.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, this is how I feel today. And then also trying to like, in a better state. It was also like after I had, I think another part of that anxiety spiral wasn't just the job stuff. I think it was also, I had had a date with that guy and he was just like, it was just, it just felt like the intensity with which he liked me sort of overwhelmed me. Cause I was like, I felt like a little much.
Mm.
And I think that was sort of like getting me like, I don't like to feel like worshipped on a pedestal, like with somebody I just met. Cause then I feel like, is this even about me or is this codependence? Like, cause it's like normal to like somebody, but there's a level of it where it doesn't feel like it's healthy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it comes too fast, it can come from a weird place.
That's and also, it does lead to anxiety. I feel like that is the emotion it elicits. It makes you like,
Yeah.
I'm not in Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. I'm not in SLAW, but there's like a SLAW saying that they use with dating. And they say the slower you go, the more you know, which means like, just take your time and get to know someone. Like,
totally.
The slower you go, the more you know if there's like actually a there. Like,
that makes a lot of sense.
True.
And I'm really into that vibe. So
yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And I think that like oftentimes, like if somebody is really like complimentary to you or like worshiping you, there's like a part of you that's like, oh, this feels good. But then there's a part of you that feels like, I don't know if I'm like there as well. And like, it's.
And do they want to be worshipped in return? Like, that's not something I do. All of that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that like the healthier I'm getting, the more I'm spotting codependency like really fast. And when a guy is like, needs someone to be like, you're perfect. And I'm just going to put everything on you because like, I don't really know who I am. And so like, you have to like be everything and like make all our decisions. And you know, there's a lot of guys out there like that, or at least I happen to have like that thing that helps you find loose change at the beach. I have that for those guys. So if anybody wants someone to blindly worship them,
you have an anxious guy detector. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just to fuse with them. Let me know.
Well, I think it sounds like it's off to a good start with that dude from everything I've heard.
I mean, I feel bad saying it, but
you're not. Oh, it's done. So
I haven't said it officially, but I think I realized yesterday that it is.
Okay.
So a really good start.
Was it the affection anxiety that like made it seem not viable, or were there other things?
I was sensing some codependency and I was sensing a dynamic that I don't like, where like I'm in charge of everything and I'm the boss and I'm totally in control and someone's just going with whatever I'm a very strong person, like, but I'm not looking for like a beta follower. Like, I'm looking for somebody who can hold their own and push back.
Right.
And, you know?
Yes. Okay. That's a very, very real reason. I get that.
Yeah. And I just found myself on a very gut level being like, no.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad. I really hope he doesn't listen to this. He's a lovely guy. So nice. Very handsome. Like, just not
for
me. Yeah,
you're great. If you're listening, you're great.
I hope you're not listening.
Also, we do love the numbers, but...
We do. Yeah.
What numbers?
Just the listenership. We're never going to turn away a listener, but...
No. Yeah.
Oh, yes. No. You're right. Yeah. I mean, definitely,
always
like,
trying to build. Always
please, like,
to build
review and subscribe, actually, if you don't mind.
Just don't subscribe to me.
Do you guys think that's mean that I'm talking about it on here, but I haven't, like, let the person know?
He doesn't listen, does he?
I think it's okay.
He doesn't listen, and I'm not, like, giving any clues at all.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
I think it's okay.
Totally fine.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to tell you about episode 292 of Office Hours Live, with our special guest, documentary filmmaker Lance Oppenheim, and musical guests, Melinda Sullivan and Larry Goldings. You can find us on your podcast app of choice.
And
goodbye.
YouTube, and at YouTube.com.
And at YouTube.com/goodbye.
/Office Hours Live.
Okay. All right. Well, let's dive into not another episode of Sex and the City, but part one of the first Sex and the City movie. Oh, man. Oh, man. We are so psyched to talk about this movie.
May I say something before we start?
You may.
Thank you, Jamie Lee. I have to say, I hadn't seen the movie in quite a while. I mean, years. And I know that the second movie has a humongous reputation for being terrible. I probably saw it. I don't remember much about it. But I have to say, I watched the first half so that we could talk about it. And then I'll watch the second half. I was loving it. I was like,
it's a blast.
I was like, this movie does not get enough credit. This is like as fun. This is like Clueless. I'm like having such a good time watching.
I know. I watch it a lot too. There is something about it that is not great.
What?
But I keep coming back to it. I don't know. I actually don't know.
Maybe my taste has gotten worse. I think it's great, Jamie. I think it's great.
Rose, I want to be clear. I watch it all the time. I want to be clear. Like, every few months, I will like put it on the background or something. Ugh. So I clearly love it, but there's something I'm sure Skylar can tell me. What do you think I don't like about it?
My thing is, I had a good time watching it, but there's something about it that doesn't feel. It doesn't really feel like a movie. It feels like a season of the show. It feels like a long episode, or like you break this out a little bit. This is like six episodes of the show, pretty easily, and it feels a lot like that to me.
Maybe
which,
that's why I love it.
It kind of just keeps going and going and going and going and going, and you're like, there's just like so many problems, and so much is achieved over. Yeah, I mean, like, look, this is also the reason I love it. Like, the reason I hate it is probably the reason I love it. So
that's interesting. I think you guys are right about. Maybe why people don't consider it like a great film is maybe because it does feel like more TV. But I think because I love the show, even if it just feels like the show, I'm like completely on board.
No, and it's absolutely. Also so like splashy and fun, and it's fast paced and it has fun music. Like, and they go to Mexico. Like, it is a blast.
Yeah,
it is a blast.
The thing is, it feels like. Sorry, go ahead, Scott. But
I was just gonna say it's a really fun season of the show. It's weird as a movie, I think, is what my bump is.
I think that's right. I think that's a real, I bet it, oh, I wonder, that's a Jenny Bix question. I wonder if any of the plots or plot points had been developed in the room and then they used them.
Totally. Yeah, it'd be fascinating.
That's interesting. I have to say also that there are a couple other things I want to say just as a general note before we dive in, is that the fashion, I think it was the best it's ever been. I think everyone looks the hottest they've ever looked. Like, at least Miranda looks incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are entire scenes where it's a montage of Sarah Jessica just look. I mean, she's got perfect hair extensions. Her hair is so amazing. She's got such a bod. And she's just trying on these dresses. And I'm like, watching this movie feels like sitting with your best friends in high school and flipping through a 17 and being like, I'd wear that. I wouldn't wear that. Like,
That closet montage is just so like, I bet the studio is like, you got to put one in. We need a montage. We need a fashion show. Oh,
it was so fun to watch. I mean, for me, I just love clothes and fashion, and they really indulge us in this movie.
Yeah, it is one where even, I mean, obviously this show when it was on had HBO money, big budgets, but like you can even feel it. The ramp up here, the movie money here is really on the screen.
So much movie money. Okay, well, cool. With that, Rose, take us into part one of the first Sex and the City movie.
Thank you, James. The first Sex and the City movie opens up with quite the catch-up montage. Charlotte and Harry are living with their daughter, Lily. Miranda and Steve are deep in their Brooklyn life with Brady. Samantha's managing Smith's career, which is like he's now a really successful TV actor, and they're both living in LA. And Carrie and Big have been together for 10 years now.
Carrie and Big are also apartment hunting, which isn't going great. But their broker does know one more place that they could look, a penthouse. It is almost perfect, except the closet is the size of a shoebox. Miranda wants Carrie to be protected and not give up her apartment. Big will own the new one, but Carrie just wants her to be happy for her. A little jealous, but mostly happy.
The core four catch up at an auction where Samantha has her eye on a flower diamond ring. But even with her Hollywood cash, she loses the bidding for the ring. It was such a fun scene. Everything that was for sale came from a woman whose relationship fell apart, and all because she never married the guy. Miranda, Charlotte, and Samantha look at Carrie. What if that happens to her?
So Big and Carrie end up talking about the penthouse and would Carrie own it? Would Big own it? Would they own it together? She offers to sell her place so she can have some stake in the penthouse, but Big says that's not necessary. Why don't they just get married?
We decided to get married.
And I'm deaf.
I'm so excited!
Everybody is looking.
Sorry! I'm so sorry, everyone, but this is my friend, and she just got engaged, and she has been going out with the man for 10 years!
I am mortified. There is literally a ringing in my ear.
And the big news was about to go by coastal.
Samantha Jones?
Well?
I made a little decision I hope you'll be happy about.
Oh, honey, you finally got Botox.
No, I did not get Botox.
I'm telling you, Carrie, you're gonna love it.
I did not call
to talk about Botox.
Well, I'm just saying.
So, last week.
After the auction, I started thinking about my options.
Right.
And, well, Big and I decided to get married.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
You sounded more excited about the Botox.
Honey, I am
excited for you, but you know me. I don't really believe in marriage. Now, Botox, on the other hand, that works every time. Honey, I gotta go.
We can catch up when I'm in town next week.
Hello.
I think I was in shock.
I mean, it's you getting married.
This is not some random person, it's you.
Yeah, I hear ya.
I guess I thought that after that
big mess with Aiden, you'd never want to get married. So I put you in my we're never getting married file, and now I'm gonna have to take you out of that file.
Well, I'm sorry about all the extra paperwork.
You'll get my bill.
Samantha, it just
feels so different this time. You know, there's no cliched, romantic, kneeling on one knee. It's just two grown-ups making a decision about spending their lives together.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Oh, and hey, one more thing. I want you to be maid of honor. How do you feel about that?
The same way you feel about Botox.
Painful and unnecessary.
I have to say, I'm very surprised that out of all of the girls, she would choose Samantha because number one, she would know Samantha wouldn't enjoy this. And I'm sorry, I'm sticking with my conspiracy theory that I think Miranda and Carrie are the best friends out of all of them.
Yes, the only reason it needs to be Samantha is because we need to get the perspective of we need to get like the anti-marriage perspective in there because I think mm-hmm. it reminds the audience sort of like where Carrie's at. Like they kind of use Samantha for exposition because if she called Miranda, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It could be interesting if she called Miranda, but I do understand why they went with Samantha.
I think it makes sense she didn't call Miranda to get excited because Miranda's just a rain on your parade type.
Yes.
But do you agree that like in terms of friendship dynamics and closeness, because isn't the maid of honor, like, even though it's so dramatic to have to pick, isn't that sort of like your best friend?
Yeah, but then also Miranda, like, she kind of was like, well, what's the deal with the apartment? Like, are you getting, like, she, I don't know, mm-hmm. she's a little, I feel like she's still soured on, like, their relationship, even though they've been together 10 years. I don't know why anyone is surprised by this if they've been together 10 years. Like, it seems very anticlimactic, to be honest.
I also just think having Samantha as the maid of honor solves a little bit of a story problem with having her in LA because like the entire movie, she's flying back to New York for like at every opportunity. And if she's the maid of honor, then it's like there's another clean reason for her to be around everyone again.
I think it works for the story's purposes. I'm talking about, like, does it make sense considering six and a half seasons they've laid out? But yeah, I mean,
maybe because she like wants permission to. I think that's also the type of conversation they're having. It's not just like, I'm getting married. It's like, you're my friend who knows what.
Sorry, no, I was thinking in Samantha, like
yeah,
her
well,
almost
like,
needing
yeah,
her to say it's
she
okay.
She needs her to say it's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is a little
That's
bit.
Interesting. I also thought that it was relatively lucid and like mature of Samantha to call back like 5 minutes later and have the emotional intelligence to say, I'm sorry I wasn't excited for you. I was personally spiraling because I was thinking about what you're doing is impacting my sense of, it's kind of like, if you stop drinking and then you have a friend with an alcohol problem and they're like, come on, keep drinking because you have to be in my. And it's like, OK, well, if you're really secure not being married to Smith, then you shouldn't care. But it's like she must have some insecure feelings because otherwise, why does it matter what anyone else is doing?
Like, totally.
That's it's a really good point.
I also thought that the penthouse thing was really interesting when they like are like the beginning of this. Movie starts with Big and Carrie looking at like comically shitty apartments where it's like the bathtub is in the kitchen. And when you open the refrigerator, you sleep inside of the freezer drawer. And it's like they go from that and they're like, there's also like a penthouse that's like,
there's also one that's actually a fully different price range for Rockefellers if you want to see that.
Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, let's see that. I mean, I'm sorry. This is just writer stuff to be picking,
it
but
is.
It's like,
it is. It
for
is.
Them to be seeing these like dumps and then being like, but I could also see a $5 million penthouse as well as like a rat hole in like Crown Heights or something.
Our range, our budget is actually somewhere in the $500,000 to $16.8 million.
Yeah, it's like,
do you have anything?
That's the kind of the window, the small, narrow window we're trying to stay inside of. We're working with like a pretty tight bracket.
Basically, we can afford anything.
It's like a sloppy Joe and a hand job and then like, $1 billion.
We're looking for like, I mean, we're open to an 8-bedroom, but like we're also cool with the 2.
Yeah, I'd love to see like a really claustrophobic railroad with like some black mold and Greenpoint, but then also what do you have in the Flatiron building?
But definitely if you could sort of exclusively show us shitholes for like a couple of months and then reveal that you actually have something we'd like, that'd be cool.
It was just so stupid. I was like,
you're so right. It's such a funny thing to pick up on. I never thought of it. You're so right. It's fucking crazy.
It's also like that shithole apartment is not in the same building as this 5,000 square foot floor to ceiling like Palacio, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it is. It's like the fucking Bellagio.
No, there's definitely like angels with like water fountains coming out of its like butthole and mouth. Like,
it's like I keep showing you great utility closets, and you guys just won't buy.
Yeah, I know.
Oh God, that made me happy.
Kind of an interesting wedding conversation too, because it's like a really unromantic way to start talking about getting married. To be like, hey, if I move into your place, I have no, I mean, maybe this is just what being an adult is, and it's being responsible, but I don't know. I feel like that is pretty unromantic to be like, hey, you could really fuck me over if we're not married financially. So like, let's get married so that like, if we break up, I'm not like homeless. It just feels like a really, really unromantic start
it's
to a marriage.
I mean, definitely. I'm surprised that when I watch that scene, I still do find it romantic because they have such a good chemistry, I guess. Because like when he does the thing where he's like chopping, or I can't remember what he was doing. He was like cooking something and he's like, I wouldn't mind being married to you. I was like, oh, that actually is kind of like sweet. Like I felt like he had been thinking about
totally
it or
sweet.
Something. So, but I know what you mean. It's like the logistics, but it's so true though. Like, If you're secure in your relationship, having kind of like a gentle startup conversation versus like a thrilling proposal probably would be romantic if like the foundation of the relationship is great. You might not even like think of it like that. But I think, when you're watching it in a movie, it feels like oh, okay, we're so used to like this part of it being like
windswept,
really
on
exciting,
the cliff.
Yeah. Or like more of a conversation. Whereas this was just like, yeah, we're in our kitchen and we kind of like decided. I don't know. What does it say about me, though, that I thought it was romantic? Like,
no,
I actually did.
I think you're right. Well, it's romantic for somebody like him because he's so anti. And if we're being completely honest, 90% of engagements are probably more like this. You already live together. You've already been there for a long time. It's, you know, even the idea of doing like a surprise while, and then like all of a sudden you turn around and someone's on one knee and you're like on a veranda. It's like,
and you're like, get up, like stand up.
You're like, people can see you, you fucking moron.
People are looking. He's like, I thought you would like that.
Get
off. Stand up.
Your knees are filthy.
Get up right now. You stand up.
Looks like you're about to eat me out. Yeah, I think that you're right that it's not so bad. I also did have to say one thing that I think is really interesting too. Again, Sex and the City is a beloved show for many different kinds of people, and it was a rallying show for people who self-identify as basics or have been called basics by their hipster friends. But it's not that basic that a woman has basically decided, it's pretty clear she's not having kids. She's in her deep 40s at this point. The star of the rom-com is in her late 40s, not interested in having kids, having a really adult discussion about like, we should probably get married so that I don't get screwed over in a breakup.
Yeah, it's a really great point. It is. Yeah, it's funny because you're right. It is like, it's also just marketed as like, you know, get ready for the glitter and the glam of Sex and the City. It's like she like got not proposed to in a kitchen.
Right. Yeah. It's like for a show for like chick stuff, it's like, it's pretty progressive.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, it is. It's packaged as like
everything you could ever
want.
Here
we go again. Yeah. Yeah, here we go again. Another classic rom-com. And then it's like, not really, guys.
Not exactly.
They go pretty deep. Okay, we'll take us back into it, Rose.
And Carrie, Charlotte, and Anthony, our favorite character, get to wedding planning. They're limiting their guest count to 75 guests, and Carrie's already found the dress. Unfortunately, it's very plain. I just have to say, this is a really funny scene. And even when he's like, think about it, how it sounds, 75 guests, it has to be 75, because if you have 76, it's just, I mean, all I'm saying is, Anthony is like smoked paprika. It only takes a tiny bit to just flavor the whole dish.
Yeah. Pop a scene lingo. With him. Yeah. I appreciated the food reference. Yeah. He really does like spice up every single scene.
And I love that she shows them this like really frumpy, like boxy blazer and like mid-length skirt. And is like, I'm going to get married in this.
Also, just another writer's note, her being like, what? Like, what? You're like, do you understand? Like, you literally wear like tinfoil berets. Like, you are into fashion. You're fashion forward.
Yeah.
Like, so for you to just show this like shit, whatever outfit.
It's like, looks like it's for Barbara Walters.
You know it's plain. Yeah, you know it's Barbara Walters chic. And like, so then to have them be baffled by it, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, she would not.
You're so right, Jamie.
It's not like, fabulous enough for her.
It's like your whole life is like spiraling into debt so that you can wear a tiny hat, like a mini hat. So you can like bury a tiny hat in your hair somewhere for like, oh, I have to say, oh God, I have to say it now. I'm sorry it's a spoiler, but everyone who's listening has already seen the movie 1,000 times.
Yes, of course.
I also thought this movie was very funny. I don't know if Michael Patrick King wrote it or who wrote it, but like there was a moment where like it's after her botched wedding where she was like, was I into it? There was a fucking bird in my hair.
Yeah, like, I know. I love when she references her own fashion. It happens so rarely.
And just like realizing that she's like bananas with fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Okay, so back home later, Charlotte sees that Carrie has an announcement for her wedding on page 6. Big and Carrie are a little annoyed because like Big has issues with like anything that's like public about their relationship, apparently. But Enid, Carrie's editor at Vogue, sees it as an opportunity. What if Carrie is their 40-year-old bride in the age issue of the magazine? Enid insists she'll be the last single girl.
Also, I have to interrupt again, and I'm sorry. I just feel like First of all, I think it's really interesting that no one knows who leaked it to the press. And it's actually a story thread that never gets resolved, because my gut was like, oh, we're going to find out in a scene and a half that Samantha gifted it to them as a wedding present to give them tons of PR. Like the fact that like the fact that they say we don't know who did this, I thought for sure there would be an answer to that question. So I thought it was really interesting that they even brought that up and then didn't answer it.
I think in their heads, they're like, this is a subtle way to show that we've gotten way more famous in the last 10 years. Like big, big might be like more of a Rockefeller now, and like maybe did some big like business venture. Like maybe they're more of an it couple now than they were.
That's interesting.
And that was their way of sort of doing it with like.
I also side with Big and Carrie about being annoyed about it, because it's like, I'm very jinxy and superstitious. And if I got married, I wouldn't want it to be built up because it would stress me out. Yeah, like I would want it to be really private. So like, I actually totally understand. I also think that Enid is one of the most fascinating characters on this show. Enid to me feels like the self-critical voice that every single woman has. That's like, anything after 40 is an embarrassing clown mess. Like just how harsh she is about ageism. And it's like, so self-hating. Like if you're put on a wedding dress in your 50s, like you're a hilarious dog that we all feel bad for. It's like the level of criticism and misogyny is like really an ageism. I think Enid brings it every scene she's in.
Yeah, she does. She's very insecure. And it's good because she always has, it's a great thing for Carrie to kind of push back on, or actually all of the girls to kind of push back on.
I think they push back and internalize. I think they do both. Like,
I think that's right.
And I think that's why Enid's a good character, because it's like when I see her on screen, I'm like, I'm not in my 50s, but I still think it's like, dude, if you ever get married at any age and want to wear a white dress, I would never make fun of someone for doing that. Or like, but at the same time, I understand that we're all marinating in this stew of like, these weird fake ages and, you know, these weird fake goalposts.
Yes. Which is so funny, because then once you're like actually at the age that you think is like the scary age, you're like, this is fine. Like, it's all fine.
Exactly.
It's just the anticipation. I mean, every time I've been wrong. I remember being afraid to turn 19.
Wait, that's hilarious, Jamie.
The big 19. I was like, this is the last stop before like my 20s. And I remember being like, and then I turned 19. I'm like, what the fuck was I worried about?
Okay, wait, this is a tangent, but what age were you most excited to turn? For me, it was 13, because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be a teenager. My boobs are going to be so big.
Oh, I think 13 was a big one. Yeah, maybe 16.
Into the teens.
Yeah, and then, I think 10 actually for me. I remember 10 being like the big 1-0. I was pretty...
double digits. Pretty psyched.
Yeah, double digits. Yeah.
You have to wait 90 years for the next time you jump a whole level. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Okay, well...
So, Carrie heads to her wedding shoot where she models dress after dress. This was, again, it's like Michael Patrick King knows how to make a movie for me. They were stunning, every single one. But one dress stands out, Vivian Westwood. Vivian even goes so far as to send the beautiful, wildly expensive couture dress to Carrie as a gift afterwards. Later, Carrie and Big have a talk, and Carrie leafs through a book of love letters from the library. She's trying to write something new, write a new project, and she wants to write about, she said that most of her writing up until now has been about finding love. And now she wants to write about being in love. Mm. And she tells Big that, like, why haven't you ever written me a love letter? And he says he'll do it with her vows. When she returns the book at the New York Public Library, there's a wedding being set up and she gets an inspiration. This is where she wants to get married, where all the best love stories have been told.
Miranda, Steve, Magda, and Brady all have dinner at an Italian restaurant where Miranda is stressed out. Brady isn't sleeping through the night. It is so annoying. When she gets a bit of milk foam on her upper lip, Miranda even snaps at Steve for pointing it out. But he pushes through and puts some milk on his own lip. They have sex back at home later, which doesn't go great.
How often do you guys have sex?
Miranda, please.
What? She's 3. She doesn't know what it means. I'm 41 and I still don't know what it means.
I know, but she is repeating everything.
If I'd known the girl talk was going to be on lockdown, I wouldn't have flown 3,000 miles.
No, we can talk. Let's just not use that word.
Fine. How often do you guys...
color?
Thank you. Well, I can't color enough. I could color all day, every day if I had my way. I would use every crayon in my box.
We get it. You love to color. Why are you asking?
Well, last night Steve and I were coloring, and I was just about to...
come. I'm sorry, there's no crayon equivalent.
And he wanted to switch positions, and I said, let's just get it over with. He kept trying to make it last longer.
And this is bad.
It is when you have a full-time job.
I have a full-time job.
Well, you don't also have a 5-year-old and playdates and PTA meetings and a mother-in-law in a rest home with advancing Alzheimer's. We're just going through a no-coloring phase. It comes and goes, right?
Every couple is different. Harry and I make love 2-3 times a week.
Great, now I feel worse.
Well, what was the last time for you?
6 months ago.
Oh, my.
Sounds long. but that's a dry spell.
I bet it is.
Hey, Carrie. Hmm? What about you and Big? Mm. Come on. I told Tell.
Mm-mm.
But I will tell you this. When Big colors, he rarely stays inside the lines.
Well, this has been very helpful.
You know what? This goes to a point that you brought up to me, Jamie, that I think is really interesting, that I think the listeners have also really agreed with you on, which is that, like, Carrie is, like, such a fucking prude. Like, even Charlotte is like, this is how long. And Carrie, the sex writer,
yeah, you guys
like,
are best friends and you can't, like, give a number to your friend who's, like, truly, like, her relationship is drying up. And, like, why wouldn't you want to comfort her in that moment either?
That's, yes, like, 100%. But, like, your job was literally to, like, overshare everything about your sex life for it's still your job, and now all of a sudden you're like this weird, like, meek prude.
We don't kiss and tell. You're like, what?
You'll have to read
you everyone else's kisses she tells but her own.
That's a good way to put it. And it's also, as you said, it's like she's such a prude sex writer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about
it? Bothered me.
What did you think about Miranda? I think Miranda's a really complicated character because I think she can really take it too far. Like, you know, she's under a lot of stress. She's very wound tight. She's very controlling. And we love her for it. But I do think that they were not hard enough on her for saying that to her partner, like, get it done already. Or what exactly did she say? What was the...
Yeah, just get it over with already.
I mean, male, female, non-binary, anyone hearing that from their sexual partner would...
Terrible.
It would be... You would get so insecure and in your head and feel so shitty. And it's, like, really interesting that nobody is... Like, Miranda's so harsh with them when she has something to say. And it's amazing that nobody's like, hey, Miranda, maybe stop being, like, a fucking bitch for, like, 1 second to your husband. Like... It's just she really dishes it out, but they don't really dish it out back because I feel
they got very cutesy with the crayon metaphor. And I think what you're saying is it was an opportunity for it to, like, you don't need to, like, fix this moment with jokes. You can kind of just, like, live in it and, like, see where the conversation takes you versus. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's just interesting because it's like there's just no sense of, like, you haven't had sex with your husband in 6 months. And when he tries, you get mad at him. That actually is a big deal. 6 months is a long time.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, and it's like, there's nothing wrong with you or him, but, like, yeah, probably. It's like they're not actually trying to solve the problem or even figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody pulls on the thread of, because she frames it as she has a full-time job or whatever. Like, she immediately deflects and no one's like, well, let's not explore that deflection. But, like, that's, they should. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting how, like, I guess because of time and it's a show and it's a comedy, it's like in real life, if your friend said that, you at least 1 out of 3 friends would be like, hey, Miranda, what do you think that's about? Are you still attracted to your husband? Do you still have romantic feelings for him? Are you body shame issues? Are you depressed right now? Like,
yeah, they also, from a writing standpoint, could have circled back. Like, it, they can do their little runner about crayons and all this stuff. And then someone could say, like, I'm sorry. I'm just hung up on the fact that it's been 6 months. Like, there's a way to get your jokes in and still navigate that conversation a little deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like Miranda's almost more concerned about what's normal compared to her friends than, like, the fact that she hasn't had sex in 6 months.
Also, I don't like her. I gotta say, I don't love her being like, that's normal, right? You're like, come on, girl.
Come on, Miranda.
You're a genius, and you know that's not. Like, I would like her to not be so, like, play it so dumb. I don't think that actually makes sense for the character choice. I think that's more something that would happen with Charlotte. If Charlotte and Harry weren't having sex, she would be like, that's not that big of a deal, right, guys? Like, Miranda would be like, guys, I fucking said the worst fucking thing in bed, and I can't believe I said it.
That's
like,
what that's she
should have started. Yeah. Yeah.
I do love that Charlotte and Harry are just, like, going at it. They, like, love each other. They're so horny for each other. That rules.
2 or 3 times a week. I was like,
which I think is a great amount. I think that's a lot. It is.
Yeah. I kind of love that they say that. I think that's, like, a nice thing to put out there. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a good number.
Well, I also think, like, okay, clearly I do not have a child and I don't know how hard it is. But let's be clear about something. Miranda didn't just have a baby. He's 5 years old. It's not like her body is, like, blown out from pregnancy. It's a month later. Mm-hmm. He's 5 years old. They have full-time help. She has she's rich. She has full-time care. She can go on a date anytime she wants. She works a full-time job, which we all do. So it's like, it's not like, oh, I can't have sex with him. I'm a single mother of three. I work three jobs. She works one job with full-time help. And Steve is home a lot as well. So it's like, it's not, I don't know, maybe I sound like a big bitch, but
I think that's a really good point. I think that.
Yeah, Brady's five. He's going to preschool. It's not like they're juggling this unsurmountable thing with and they're broke. They've got, like, a beautiful townhome in Brooklyn. It's just.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not. That's not who would have those problems.
Yeah, or if you do, it just, I don't know if you could fully blame it on Brady because.
That's what I mean. It's not that she obviously does have those problems. Yeah. I mean, like, to blame it on your job and stuff, you're like, I just don't think that's what's going on. And again, it's like Miranda playing dumb. And I don't like when Miranda plays dumb.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because I don't remember what happens I haven't seen the last half of the movie. And I don't even know if they're ever going to address it. My gut is going to tell me that they're not going to address why that happened. I think they're going to resolve this other issue we haven't brought up yet, but I have a feeling, you know, Miranda's not good at talking about her feelings. So if there has been a problem in the last 6 months, if she's been, you know, whether she needs to be on anxiety meds or whatever, like, I don't even think we'll end up figuring that out. Like,
no, I don't think we're going to go that deep. Okay, guys. Well, that is how far we got into the movie and, you know, to be continued in multiple parts, which you can look forward to. And we're going to end with what we always end with. I'm horny for. Sex in the City is obviously a very horny show, so we end each episode by sharing what we're currently horny for. Rose, what are you horny for right now?
I am horny for the Tina Turner documentary. And I'm really sorry, but I don't remember if it's on Netflix or HBO Max. I think it's HBO Max. Yeah. She has an incredible life story. She's incredibly strong, talented, beautiful. She's a Black rock and roll singer, which I feel like doesn't get enough credit. And yeah, it's a great doc, whether you have a particular feeling about her music or not. It's just a great doc.
Okay, great.
Jamie, what are you horny for?
I am horny for, I've gotten really into using blush as eyeshadow.
Ooh.
And yeah, I'm really into, like, using products that are not meant for a certain thing as that certain thing. So, like, I'll do the same blush on my eyes and or sometimes I'll even, like, use lipstick as blush. Like, I love, like, trying to come up with multiple purposes for makeup. And yeah, so that's what I'm horny for right now.
Fab. I love it.
All right, guys. That is the end of our episode. See you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod. And follow my co-host, Rose Cerno, on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host, Jamie, at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. If you're nasty, it helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.